morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Jonathan Byrne. I'm here on behalf of the defendant below, Mr. Guijon Ortiz. The issue in this case is whether a police officer who converted a lawful traffic stop into a criminal investigation of Mr. Ortiz's immigration status violated the Fourth Amendment by doing so. The district court found that there was no Fourth Amendment violation based on two basis for the extension of the stop, neither of which is correct. The first basis on which the district court said the stop could be extended is that at the point where the officer began to inquire about the immigration status of Mr. Ortiz and the other two gentlemen in the vehicle in which he was a passenger, the officer had already run all of the license and registration check on the driver. Everything had come back all right. He was to the point where he would either write a citation, give a warning, or let the gentleman go. Instead of writing the citation, he made the call to the local ICE office, and that kicked off the investigation of Mr. Ortiz's immigration status. The district court found that the officer's decision to do that was a constitutionally permissible choice because he could have taken the time to write the citation. Instead, he used that time to do something else. That finding doesn't have any basis in law about traffic stops and about how when an officer initiates a traffic stop, it must be limited both in its scope and its duration unless some other factors are present to allow it to be extended. This court very recently in the DiGiovanni case had a situation where an officer had pulled over a gentleman for a traffic stop and almost immediately began asking the gentleman questions about drugs. And in this court, this court found that there was a Fourth Amendment violation in that stop, and particularly as relevant to this case, the government had argued that because the whole stop only lasted about 15 minutes, that there was really a de minimis delay, and officers should really not have to worry about what they're doing as long as the stop itself doesn't take too long. And this court rejected that argument, and what they said was, you said, was it creating a rule that allows a police officer 15 minutes to do as he pleases reduces the duration component of the analysis to a bright line rule and eliminates the scope inquiry altogether? And that's what happened in this case, because at the time the officer made the decision to make that phone call and extend the stop, there was no reason to believe there was any criminal activity going on beyond the traffic infraction that led to the stop.
In fact, what are you able to point to, Byrne, to show that the officer's interest in the immigration matter as to your client was a criminal matter? What indicia? I mean, just because it's a police officer curious about or even investigating someone's documented status doesn't necessarily make it a criminal investigation, does it? Or does it?
I think in this context it does, because the stop itself was a criminal investigation.
Okay, without getting into criminal versus civil on doing one over the speed limit, 1 mile per hour over the speed limit. Conceding that that's a criminal, that the purpose of the stop of the vehicle was criminal, but then his attention was turned to Mr. Ortiz. And so my question is, what, if anything, can you point to in the record with regard to the officer's interest in Mr. Ortiz that shows it either clearly or more likely than not to be a criminal matter as opposed to a person in this country without documentation?
I don't believe you point to any indicia either way on that, Your Honor, because until he had some information about what Mr. Ortiz's status was, he would not know whether it might be a criminal or simply an immigration investigation.
Okay, so that answer seems to hurt your argument, because if it's either administrative or criminal, then...
Well, I'd say it doesn't hurt the argument, because I'd say it doesn't point to it being administrative versus criminal. I think you have an investigation being done by a local law enforcement officer. He's not normally involved in this type of, or even in an immigration type investigation. And it's being done as a follow-up of a criminal investigation. And the government points to no, and the officer didn't testify to anything that created a suspicion that there was an immigration issue here.
But what do you say about Oscar Torres, our opinion in Oscar Torres?
Well, Oscar Torres, I think, doesn't necessarily go to the validity of the stop and the extension of the stop. It would only go to whether the evidence could be excluded if the stop was illegal.
Okay, and so I guess that's where I'm struggling. There's no question the stop was proper.
The initial stop
was proper. And I don't think you argue, or maybe I need clarification. Do you argue that the stop was extended?
Yes, Your Honor.
By which you mean what?
By which we mean that the purpose of the stop were these traffic infractions. The officer got the documentation from the driver. It all checked out. The only thing left for him to do in the context of a traffic stop is issue a citation and tell the gentleman they're on their way.
Okay. And he ultimately did that. The driver and the front seat passenger were released.
After this investigation into Mr. Ortiz's immigration status and their immigration status as well, revealed the information that there might be criminal activity. But our argument is that the traffic stop was at an end when the officer made the decision not to issue a citation, and that only by either consent, reasonable suspicion, or the district court below, the sort of temporal safe zone, could the stop be extended to expand its scope and its duration into this immigration investigation.
Okay. I guess I'm having some with. Obviously, your client was stopped when the vehicle was stopped.
Correct. He was a passenger. He was not the driver.
So, is it your argument that? Let's assume, hypothetically, the officer had 7 minutes to do the traffic stop.
Okay.
All right. Is it your argument that he had to do the traffic stop in those 7 minutes? He couldn't do anything else?
The DiGiovanni case sets out that it's not just the duration of the stop that's important, it's the scope. And that normally the scope of a traffic...
But DiGiovanni dealt with the driver.
Yes.
Your client wasn't a driver.
Correct.
And so there was never any suspicion whatsoever that your client had violated any law.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and so...
Nonetheless, his detention continued beyond when the traffic stopped.
Well, but...
Or concluded.
I mean, actually, I don't want to take up your time, but one of the curious aspects of American society, it seems to me that we're seeing, why do passengers in vehicles even believe they have to identify themselves to a police officer?
Well, that would be a very good question, Your Honor. Although
it is a good question.
Although we have,
I mean, your client could have walked away from this, practically.
Not practically.
Not practically, but legally.
Well,
he could have said to this officer, "I'm not showing you anything."
I'm not so sure he could, Your Honor.
Under what law? Is a local law enforcement or any law enforcement officer entitled to identify the passenger in a vehicle? Where's the reasonable suspicion on these facts? Motorists driving 1 mile per mile over the speed limit. Why is an officer entitled to identify the occupants of the vehicle?
I agree with your concern, but my mind's grasping for, and obviously this is beyond what the research in this case that I did. But the Supreme Court a couple of years ago upheld the Nevada obstruction statute.
Statute in that case said if there is reasonable suspicion to question a person,
correct,
then the person's refusal to identify himself is an arrestable offense.
Yeah, you're correct.
Virginia doesn't have that.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
But in any event, that wasn't the situation here. There was no reasonable suspicion that the passengers in the vehicle were violating any law.
That's correct.
So he could have walked away, or he could have refused to identify himself. Again, not as a practical matter.
Theoretically, he could. I think it's asking a lot of someone
okay.
in a situation where he's confronted with a law enforcement officer speaking a different language.
So my question
is, just walk away.
My question then is, leaving aside consent, when did the unlawful detention of your client commence? Well, when did the detention commence? Was he detained simply because the car was stopped?
The stop is a form of, is itself a form of detention. He was
A stop is a stop. A detention, seems to me, means you can't walk away. Why can't a passenger walk away? Now, the officer can make the passengers get out of the vehicle.
Correct.
But I guess I'm just trying to understand your point about your argument is that the detention commenced when the vehicle was stopped, and once the officer completed what he needed to do to investigate the speeding violation, then all the time after that was an unlawful detention.
Correct.
And not only was it an unlawful detention under your submission, It was a detention for the purpose of a criminal investigation.
Correct.
And so, to get back to my original question, what can you point to that it was a criminal investigation of your client at that point, rather than is this person in the United States lawfully?
There is not anything you can point to either way at that point, Your Honor. Later on, as the detention commenced, one of the ICE officers who was consulting tried to contact the United States Attorney's Office to see if prosecution was
much later.
But that was much later.
Much later.
But
was having your client talk to ICE was that illegal?
We argued below that it was.
And why would it be illegal?
Well, because he was questioned about his identity while he was in custody without being Mirandized. However, the government at some point down below said they weren't going to use that evidence at trial anyway. And
right.
So
the Miranda issue's out of the case.
Correct.
So why was it unlawful to have him get on the phone with the ICE agent who could speak some Spanish?
I don't know if there's anything specifically unlawful about that, except that in our argument that is a fruit of a continuing illegal detention.
And the illegal detention was?
The illegal detention stems from the traffic stop. And I think I go back, and this might address your concern. The Supreme Court has held fairly recently that passengers can challenge the validity of a stop.
Sure.
And if that is true, then they should also be able to challenge the continuing validity of a traffic stop. It would be odd to be able to challenge the 1 mile over for speeding, but not the extension into a criminal investigation that wasn't supported by reasonable suspicion.
And I guess where I'm hung up is I don't see evidence that this was a criminal investigation of your client rather than essentially a consensual investigation of his immigration status. In other words, if he had simply overstayed his visa, which I don't think is a criminal prosecutable offense. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think that's criminal. I think that's deportable.
So wouldn't the officer be on good ground to question a person as to whether they'd overstayed their visa?
If it was purely in an administrative context and not done after, the car you're riding gets pulled over by local law enforcement on the side of the highway.
And I'm struggling to connect the car being pulled over with what happened afterwards.
Well,
I understand the temporal connection.
Because the only reason that happened is because the car was pulled. If the officer sees 66 and a 65 on his radar and says, oh, well, that's not worth it, we're not here. The only reason we're here is because he exercised his law enforcement authority to stop this vehicle. And while I would agree with you, there are situations where questioning about immigration status, things like that, would not necessarily be a criminal investigation. I don't think the evidence here shows that the administrative aspect is what was driving.
Is there any Supreme Court case or Court of Appeals authority for the suppression of a person's identity?
Yes, Your Honor. Guevara-Martinez.
Other than the Eighth Circuit?
I don't know right off the top of my head of one other than the Eighth Circuit.
I consumed a lot of your time.
That's all right.
Judge Gregory's permission, if you want to take just a couple more minutes.
I've got 5 minutes in rebuttal. Okay. I'll just use it then if that's all right.
Are you sure? I mean, you.
Unless you have a question specifically.
No question.
All right. Thank you.
Go ahead.
May it please the Court, Eric Goes on behalf of the United States of America. The District Court correctly denied the defendant's motion to suppress. An officer can check the validity of the defendant's permanent resident card and was not restricted to merely checking for arrest warrant. That's for two reasons. One, the District Court held that this checking the identification did not medically prolong the stop. And two, the Court also held that there was reasonable suspicion attached to this particular defendant in this particular case. Your Honor, there is authority where law enforcement officers can ask for passenger identification, and that's been upheld by this Court in Serrano-Parkland, adopting language from the United States Supreme Court, which is a...
And what's the standard for that?
The standard is it's under the line of officers have a right or a need to know who they're dealing with. Especially, and they tend to be framed on roadside stops, and that comes from...
What's the standard?
By standard, you...
What's the legal standard?
The legal standard.
That authorizes the law enforcement officer to identify a passenger.
All I can point to, Your Honor, is that a case law has suggested...
What standard in that case law?
Well, the standard...
It's reasonable suspicion, isn't it?
Actually, no, Your Honor. It's not even reasonable suspicion. The identification of who an officer is dealing with is a slightly different question than a Terry stop. We know an officer can go up to someone and just talk to them, and that doesn't involve the Fourth Amendment at all.
Right. And when an officer does that, the person can turn around and walk away with or without a profanity aimed at the officer.
Yes, Your Honor. That's true. This Court has held, and if you'll indulge me in just a quote, I think it'll shed some light and perhaps answer the question
okay.
You're asking. I'm quoting from this Court's holding in Serrano-Parkland, and specifically, this Court has held, if an officer may, as a matter of course and in the interest of personal safety, order a passenger physically to exit the vehicle, he surely may make the minimally intrusive step of requesting passenger identification. The failure of a vehicle's occupant to produce any sort of proper identification may heighten an officer's concern, suggesting a possible need for backup, while production of what appears to be a valid ID may serve to allay them. Then this Court has adopted some cases out of the Eighth Circuit, and that's this court's holding.
So you read that to mean an officer can detain an occupant of a vehicle, a non-motorist, simply because he was an occupant of a vehicle on the officer's whim?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to get you to explain to me. Where's the line between what the officer... In other words, go ahead.
An officer, for their safety on the side of the road, can simply know who they're dealing with. Who am I dealing with in this traffic stop? That's germane in this particular case because who he was dealing with was not the identification as to who he was given.
So an officer could handcuff a backseat passenger solely when the passenger refuses to identify herself.
Well, handcuffing a backseat passenger would elevate...
Well, but that's what I'm trying to get you to address. You're using that language to say that this is a constitutionally permissible detention. And if it's a constitutionally permissible detention, the officer is entitled to take reasonable steps to enforce his authority. And in some circumstances, that would require handcuffing. And it sounds like that's what you're saying, solely for refusing to give your name. I'm just not aware of any authority to that fact. It's one thing to say an officer acts reasonably for his own safety to question occupants of a vehicle, of course. But what can the officer do upon a refusal?
If the officer is refused identification, it seems, in following this court's logic, that they can at least ask for that identification.
But, he doesn't need authority to ask for it. As you just said, an officer can walk up to somebody on the street and ask for identification. Same thing would be true for a passenger in a vehicle.
I dislike giving the answer, it depends, because it's just going to so depend on the circumstances. We all would agree handcuffing someone and putting them in the back of the cruiser is significant. And even though some Terry stops justify that.
But Terry stops are based on reasonable suspicion. But you say it's not reasonable suspicion.
I say we haven't even arrived at that point, although the district court did make that alternative finding based on the facts in the specific case.
So are you conceding that here this was a criminal investigation?
No, Your Honor, I'm not.
And you don't care about reasonable suspicion then, right? Because if it wasn't a criminal investigation, does the officer even need reasonable suspicion?
In this particular case, no, because it was a valid traffic stop. And it wasn't, by the way, it wasn't just 1 mile over. The officer testified on the record.
Oh, that's right.
Evasive, he was driving, they braked heavily, they turned their heads away. So, and Judge Copenhaver found that that was significant in his alternative finding as to the basis of the stop. Even beyond that, though, an officer, upon making a reasonable stop, can promptly investigate the stop, and it is a Terry seizure. All the occupants are seized within the framework of the vehicle, and that can begin by asking for identification. Who am I dealing with? It has to be prompt. They have to find out quickly, and that's what happened in this case. And that
what would have happened if the defendant had refused to identify himself?
Well, the defendant did initially refuse to identify himself.
Right. There was some question about language. But what would have happened here if the defendant had persisted in declining to identify
himself?
What could the officer have done within the constraints of the Fourth Amendment?
I would say the officer could make reasonable attempts to identify who he's dealing with, but it's still...
So you could ask the other people in the trial, who's this guy? What's his name?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. In fact, what they did, at least in terms of providing the idea.
And what if he hadn't produced his fraudulent permanent resident card? The officer could search somebody?
Search by putting your hands on.
Yeah.
That's a little different.
If the officer's entitled to know with whom she's dealing and the subject refuses to identify herself, himself, it seems to me you have to say yes, then the officer can conduct a search. Well, you don't have to, of course, but what can the officer do?
I wouldn't go that far. I would simply say the officer could make reasonable attempts to identify who that individual is based on the specific...
And how long could the officer detain that person there to do that?
This court has never put you get 5 minutes, you get 2 minutes, you get 20 minutes. It's got to be reasonable. Florida versus Royer controls the framework, which is these.
Florida versus Royer was reasonable suspicion. Actually, it was the absolute reasonable suspicion.
That's right, Your Honor. But in Florida versus Royer, that Terry framework was sort of held over to these roadside stops. We all agree that a person who stopped on the side of the road isn't exactly free to go. But the reasonable suspicion standard beyond the Terry stop, reasonable suspicion that a person might be armed and dangerous, so you can frisk them. Is also the reasonable suspicion to get the, but it's not even reasonable suspicion at this point. This
you don't rely on consent, do you? Or do you?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
Because we don't even seem to arrive at consent. It just seems to be the holding that the officer can reasonably find out who they're dealing with. The identity of an occupant in the car is reasonable for an officer to know for officer's sake.
I really don't understand why you didn't just try the case on consent. An officer pulls over a vehicle with three people, and he asks for identification from all three. The driver's got to produce identification and registration and insurance. It seems to me the other two don't have to produce anything. But if they produce it, it seems to me it's on the basis of their consent to do so.
That's what you'll use in the next case. That's a great theory, and I'm turning it through my head. Of course, we hesitate to get up here and abandon our one theory. We're just simply seeking the identification document because when they promptly made the call, it promptly came back. That's not the guy on the car.
How long did that take, by the way?
Less than a couple of minutes, Your Honor.
Less than
a de minimis amount of time.
Less than 2 minutes.
The officer testified less than a couple of minutes. That was corroborated by the ICE agent, so it was less than a couple of minutes.
Less than.
I don't know if a couple is two exactly, but the court found it was approximately.
Okay, and how long had the actual traffic stop been in existence when those two minutes commenced?
The officer testified that the traffic stop commenced at 2:11.
2:11.
And
what time did he call?
And by that, he called himself out of the car, approached the car, and then got the identification documents, came back, and started calling those in. The next time we know is approximately 2:30 is when ICE got the phone call to run the criminal investigative check. So less than 19 minutes.
And that's okay. So that's Mr. Burns' point. Mr. Burns' point is at minute 19, it had by then exceeded any reasonable bounds of a traffic stop.
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor. The officer in this case.
On these facts, I mean, not every traffic stop, but if you had weaving and speeding 1 mile per hour over the speed limit, you issue a citation. Purely, you issue a citation within 19 minutes.
Right? It's true, Your Honor, that the officer had the identification documents. At least he'd run NCIC documents on all three people. But he didn't know that the person in the back seat was who he was purported to be. And that's essentially why we're here. Could he make the minimally invasive step of calling ICE to see, is this the person that purports to be? And that only took a couple of minutes. That's a de minimis time. And the reason why this is so important is in this
But
day
you agree he was detained for the 19 minutes.
Yes.
I'm sorry, what were the times again? 11:03?
No, Your Honor. The time stop was at approximately 2:11, and that's when the officer.
I'm sorry, 2:11.
That's when the officer called himself out of the car. So
okay.
At 2:11, he calls himself in.
2:11, and then what time is the call to ICE?
ICE said they received the call at approximately 2:30.
So it was That's the 19 minutes you.
Yeah. Again, we're dealing with the one time we know precisely. That's 2:11. That was Corporal Flowers' testimony. Both Corporal Flowers and the officer said they called approximately 2:30.
So, Mr. Dole, at what time, though, did you find out that none of the occupants are at a criminal warrant?
The officer said within his testimony that was within that initial time frame.
I know it was within. How far within? We do know it was sooner than 2:30.
What we know from what the record testifies is after the officer got no hits on NCIC, he immediately called ICE. So if we know that was the next call he made within that framework, it would be presumptively right before the approximate 2:30 deadline.
So would you agree then that the time that he found out there were no outstanding warrants, at that point the initial stop should have been concluded.
The officer had yet to go up and give the identification documents back. He also interacted briefly with the driver of the car to make sure that he had not been drinking. And by that, he asked if he had been drinking. And he also asked the driver, you could tell by talking and his experience in dealing with officers, that he had not been drinking. And then they did an exchange of information because the investigation at that point concentrated on the defendant in this particular case. So the precise answer to your question, Your Honor, is had he finished his investigation at 2:30, no, not entirely, because he was still trying to determine if the NCIC names, which return negative, were accurate. In other words, if he gets false names, it's going to show no warrants. So it's important.
When do you say the brief detention after stop ended? Apart from the defendant here, when do you say the stop ended? Detention, the brief detention after the stop, which the stop was based on traffic, probable cause for traffic offense. When did that end?
It ended approximately 10 minutes later when the driver and passenger were told they were free to go. And in that time, the defendant himself had interacted with ICE. He had spoken to the ICE agent on the side of the road in an effort to confirm or dispel the suspicions of, because the card was mismatching. In other words, the name, so there was an extra delay due to the information that the defendant had given, which was faulty. So approximately 30 minutes. In fact, the driver and passenger both testified, Your Honor, and they said the entire length of the traffic stop lasted between 20 and 30 minutes. So they actually crunched the time down a little more narrowly, but it doesn't. So from their perspective and their testimony, the entire stop lasted between 20 and 30 minutes. It seems like it was probably a little bit longer, but that was their, that was the button they put on. Because the officer diligently pursued it, and because there was an alternative reason for the officer to focus his attention on the passenger, and that was the finding that Judge Copenhaver made, saying this particular defendant did not initially respond to the request for identification, and he was acting nervous. Fortunately, Corporal Flowers testified as to the nervousness aspect, differentiating it. He said specifically in his testimony, he'd been an officer for approximately 9 years. He'd done over 1,000 traffic stops, and he knew people were typically nervous in a citizen law enforcement encounter. He said the way this defendant was acting was different. He was nervous, indeed, his hands were shaking. And that was adopted by the district court as one of the factors. So it's not just a case of picking off, he was nervous, he was evasive, he was this. The officer amplified, based on his experience, that he knows the difference between interaction. We would all be nervous if we pulled over. And what this officer interacted with this particular defendant. That, coupled with the fact that this officer was acting alone, he was acting promptly to call in these specific facts and get this particular data promptly. There was no evidence that he was trying to stall or delay or fudge this out. He was trying to get the information as quickly as he could. Remember, in this case, he's acting alone. In some other cases, the officer has the benefit of backup or assistance. And finally, this court raised the concern about linked and identity information be suppressed. In this case, the testimony is that the ICE agents themselves were speaking within the context or within the confines of an administrative stop only. This court has held in Oscar Torres that identity information can, in fact, be suppressed if there's a prior illegality. Now, we're not conceding the prior illegality, and Judge Copenhaver specifically found there was no prior illegality, but even if there had been, the identity information, this defendant's identification information, his fingerprints, could be used to identify who he actually was, the defendant, and his actual prior criminal history, and his history of prior reentries. So it's for that reason that this particular aspect of the case, which is to say, who he is, would survive even if somehow Corporal Flowers did something wrong or did something untoward.
Do you agree, though, this case is different than a police officer approaching someone on the street and asking for identification?
Yes.
Because he was detained. He couldn't leave. You agree?
I agree. A person stopped on the side of the road is temporarily. Yes, sir.
Right. He's temporarily detained. So then they went there to fingerprint for what purpose? He admitted at that point that he was illegally in the country.
They fingerprint for the purpose that unfortunately was apparent here. The defendant was lying about his true identity. The fingerprints show who he actually was.
Why do you need fingerprints if the person has already admitted that I'm illegally in the country? The next thing is to deport him or her.
Because unfortunately, in this case, Your Honor, it was to the defendant's advantage to admit who he was the false name on the false identification document, as opposed to who he actually was, the defendant with the prior felony criminal record and the prior deportation. That made his being in the country illegally a more serious crime.
So then at that point, you're saying you admit that it had turned to an investigation. Criminal investigation.
No, not yet. And in fact, that's not what the testimony of the ICE officers was. They were proceeding entirely on an administrative purpose, up to and including Mirandizing. They complied with Oscar Torres completely, which is to say they were investigating this defendant for an administrative purpose. Even if he had a prior criminal history, that does not necessarily mean he's going to be prosecuted criminally. And even if he were in the country illegally, that does not necessarily mean he's even going to be deported. In fact, just as recently as a month ago, it seems that they're changing standards on who's going to be deported and who's not. That's an ICE administrative concern as opposed to our concern. But we see that there would be an advantage of this defendant giving a false name and false identification. And that's where fingerprints result. Fingerprints are who they are.
I just wonder, how do these cases lead to a police officer stop someone, let's say they're the driver, and for a good reason they're weaving, but because they have a Spanish accent, speak Spanish, then can you then prolong and say, well, this is administrative and it's not criminal and we're keeping you now because we want to find out your status. Well, where are we with that in terms of our protections as the Fourth Amendment? Never.
I'm out of time, Your Honor. May I
no,
answer that question?
Well, I'm the lead judge. You're in good shape. Go ahead.
The district court in this case made no finding as to Spanish or language difficulty. The court's larger concern is
district court. I thought this whole case started because the man couldn't answer the question, "Who are you?" And they looked at him and said, "What's wrong with him?" And he said, "He doesn't speak Spanish." And then he said, "Well, would you tell him in Spanish? I want to know who he is." It started at the very outset. The language barrier is what put this in motion, did it not?
Not necessarily, Your Honor.
Okay, well, tell me what did.
There is some evidence that this defendant understood some English, and that was the testimony of the ICE officer. Exempting that, yes, the court is exactly correct. That's what sort of got the ball rolling in terms of the request for identification.
Well, that's my question. What happens when you have the driver who has some difficulty with the King's English, and then that means now, well, our first stop was for weaving, but that's finished. Now it's administrative. Now, who are you? I'm going to call ICE and see whether or not, is he in Arizona? I mean, what?
Look, on behalf of the Department of Justice, I am going to ask this court to never make a finding that because someone who can't speak English, that is a factor contributing to the suspicion. Now, that differs from somebody
But isn't that the, I understand, counsel, believe me, my question is in no wise mean in terms of impugning you to say or the government, that's your motive. We have to look at what may be the unintentional consequences of good intention. And that is, if we say that it's administrative solely because there's indicia of your language barrier, and therefore your language barrier means you may not be here legally, then you become out of the ambit of protection for criminal Fourth Amendment, and now you're in this administrative area. There's no, as you said, we don't know how long we can even hold you or keep you and determine that, well, we've got to call ICE, but then next Homeland Security, well, we call your embassy. What do we do? How does this end in terms of, in the context of criminal Fourth Amendment protection, if we can now shift it to an administrative aspect, which you agree it was not criminal, it was administrative ICE, is now local police officers are becoming immigration enforcers, really, aren't they?
It tends to be that local officers encounter people in the country illegally with greater frequency than the people in ICE. The ICE tends to get called out.
And they identify them solely because of their accent or their inability to speak English, don't they?
No.
They don't?
In this particular case, the officer was specifically asked by me what role, if any, did race play in the stop? None, was the testimony of the officer.
Did I say anything about race? I thought I said accent and inability to speak the language. I didn't say anything about his ethnicity.
Well, we were trying to flush out, Your Honor, in this particular case from this particular officer, what subjectively was going through his mind. Now we know. Courts have said, don't look at an officer's subjective intent. What would a reasonable officer do? Would it be reasonable for an officer to assume that because someone doesn't speak English, that they're in the country illegally? I'm saying no. And I'm saying not only are those not the facts in this case, I'm saying no, I don't like going down that path, and I don't want to represent that on behalf of the government. That's too disturbing. I'm not even sure it's a factor. All I'm saying is under those specific situations, if a person is given a permanent resident alien card, it's prudent and reasonable for an officer just to call in to see if it's valid.
excuse is valid.
Yes. That's all he did.
For everybody. For everyone. Because this man, there was nothing in this record to indicate that it looked to be fraudulent identification. None at all. The only thing here was there was a language barrier, but as soon as that was accomplished through one of the other passengers interpreting or translating the question, and he answered appropriately, even the nervousness was recorded before that. I don't recall in this record any nervousness after he was able to hear the question in his own language and answer it. I don't see any differentiation. The ID looked real. He was in a car. No furtive activity, nothing about drugs, nothing like that. It seemed to be the linchpin was he didn't speak the language. And there's no evidence of how he looked. That's why I said, I'm surprised you said anything about race, because people speak Spanish, all different types of colors. And I don't think that's the issue. The question here is only language. The language barrier, the ID was not a question. So it seemed to me that the only thing is that now I can, as a local police officer, I'm going to call ICE on you. You sit here till I call ICE. And then I'm going to get somebody else on the line, and we're going to find out who you are. And then we get your fingerprints and then find out whether or not you have a criminal record. What is the restraining aspect of this fact? In this fact, in this case, they would say this is not the Pandora box.
Well, all cases are going to turn on their specific facts. In this particular case, to answer the judge's specific question, it was, in fact, when he was handing over the identity that the officer made a finding of nervousness. That's reflected in the record on JA-32. So it was Corporal Flowers' observation that was when, in fact, he detected the nervousness. But the court's concerned about a broader procedural question. And again, it's going to be reasoned. Florida versus Boyer controls these accounts. Is it firm? Is it limited in scope and duration? Is the officer getting his act together? That was the facts in these cases. So it's very difficult to say in a typical encounter, can an officer call in to check an identity to see if that's who they're talking to? It seems that this court has held yes, and it seems that the Supreme Court has held yes, promptly and within the scope of the encounter. Can they make them sit there all day? Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Well, we don't know yet because the case hadn't come up yet.
That's not this case.
We don't know. We're in new territory. We don't know whether it's 2 days or 1 day yet.
Okay. There are some cases that have held Terry stops get converted to de facto arrest, and if there's a de facto arrest, then there has to be probable cause.
But he doesn't get the effect. I mean, it wasn't stopped. He wasn't a driver. That's what I'm saying. That's what this makes this case a little different. He and Judge Davis' question, telling counsel, said, well, we're talking about him. If it's administrative, is he in the ambit of that protection, or is he now in this land called administrative and subject to whatever detention and length and time and breadth and scope, fingerprint or whatever, and actually was transportation to another place. It took him someplace else, didn't it?
Believe they did. And right. Believe me, I've struggled with administrative law. Lancaster City, we tend to deal with these cases. It is a separate hearing. It is a separate carve out by Congress to rapidly take situations where people are in the country illegally and deport them.
But by federal statute, isn't that the sole job of the federal government in terms of enforcement, in terms of immigration?
The Department of Justice is litigating that very thing in a number of states, and yes, I'm going to say right now, it's the sole job of it.
Exactly. That's what I thought. The Justice Department, that's your position. So, I mean, what is your position? Well, I won't put you on the spot yet. That's all.
With Judge Gregory's permission, I have one or two more. Could you prove this case even if the fingerprints are suppressed?
If the fingerprints were suppressed?
If the fingerprints are suppressed, could you prove this case of illegal reentry after deportation without the fingerprints?
It would be very difficult.
But you could do it, couldn't you?
The information, I could prove, no, two things. I could prove on the side of the road that the defendant admitted he was in the country illegally. At 8 U.S.C. 1325, rarely charged, but it would seem that we would have that. But his identity, Your Honor, would be actually inevitably discovered through the booking process. The Judge Copenhaver made that alternative finding.
So you could prove the case. In fact, do you think you could actually use the fingerprints through the inevitable discovery exception to the exclusionary rule?
The district court judge made that alternative finding. Who he was inevitably going to come out. You can't suppress jurisdiction.
Well, but who he was is different from can you prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he is the same person who was deported after having been convicted years previous. I mean, that's obviously a distinct question, but I take your point.
I would argue, or at least ask the court to see if that would not have been inevitably discovered. If I were precluded from using that, then I would be relying on simply the information that was gathered on the side of the road. I would argue that would be sufficient for showing he was in the country illegally, but if that were the cutoff point, that would be a pretty tricky case to try, by the way.
But the charge wasn't being in the country illegally. It was being in the country illegally after having been deported.
In a prior. Yes,
yeah. I mean, contrary to Mr. Burns' earlier response to my question, and he'll get a chance, Judge Copenhagen didn't suppress his identity here. He suppressed the fingerprint and the statements. Right?
No, Your Honor.
What did he suppress?
He didn't suppress anything.
The motion? I'm sorry. He wasn't asked. You're right. Of course. Of course. He wasn't asked to suppress his identity. He was asked to suppress the fingerprints and the statement.
Yeah.
And he denied the motion. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And which leads me to my closeout line. Because there was no clear error by the holdings of the district court.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So, Vern, you have reserved some time.
A couple of quick things. To jump right in on the idea of inevitable discovery and what they could prove. First of all, they couldn't use the statements along the side of the road because they've already waived their right to use the statements along the side of the road. If they're going to use those, we've got a whole other argument to make. Secondly, they've never raised the idea of inevitable discovery, and the idea that his identity or who he was would be inevitably discovered as part of the booking process assumes he's legally in custody in the first place. If the officer had let everyone go when he should have, they never would have had him to ask him any questions. And so I don't think the inevitable discovery idea gets off the ground. To go back to a question Judge Davis and I went back and forth on in terms of whether Mr. Ortiz could have left, could have just walked away, this goes to the practical aspect, but after he provided his identification, the officer retained that identification throughout the stop. So it's not real. A reasonable person wouldn't feel free to walk away in a situation where their identification is being held by law.
I think that's very fair. Why isn't that consent?
To turn over the...
Yeah. Why doesn't his turning over the green card, why isn't that perfectly legitimate consensual act on his part?
I would argue that the situation where you're on the side of the road confronted with a law enforcement officer who says provide your identification is not a consensual encounter.
What's not consensual about it?
I don't think a reasonable person would expect that they could deny that request in that situation. He's in a confined space. He's in the back of the truck. There's no easy way for him to get out. Confronted with a law enforcement officer who's making demands, first of all, in a language he doesn't understand.
Well, but of course, under Bustamante, he doesn't have to know he can refuse for there to be voluntary consent.
That's true, Your Honor.
Okay.
But it does come down to whether a reasonable person thinks he can refuse consent. And that's one fact to consider. But I think in this situation.
I mean, Soriano doesn't say a person is not entitled to refuse. It simply says the officer is entitled to ask, which of course is true. You don't even need the Constitution for that.
That's true.
The
other thing I would say is that the government has never argued consent, and I think that argument is away.
Of course, we can affirm on any...
You can't affirm from any basis apparent in the record, but given that consent was never raised at any point, I don't think there's sufficient development to allow you to do so in this case.
Point three.
Going back to... the question of Mr. Ortiz's nervousness that the officer reported, the actual testimony is on page 32 of the joint appendix, and the officer does say he was very nervous, but he doesn't make any of these comparisons between thousands of prior stops or anything like that. He doesn't indicate that it is somehow exceptional. and particularly given the court's recent holdings in Foster and Massenburg, where it's quite rightly taken a very much more skeptical view of the government's attempts to sort of mold innocent behavior into a basis for reasonable suspicion, I'd say that is sufficient to support the reasonable suspicion.
Do you think they can prove the case without his fingerprint?
Probably not, because if the fingerprints are suppressed, it would be because of an illegal stop, and everything else would go out too.
Well, there is everything else. You don't really mean to say that the suppression, the exclusionary rule applies to a person's corporeal reality.
Well,
in other words, he is in the country, and you don't suppress his body.
Not anymore.
You say not anymore? Probably not anymore.
His term of imprisonment is completed, so I
assume
he's been deported.
So you don't suppress a body, ever. That's clear, right?
That's correct. Yes, I think I misspoke when you said that.
Because, that's all right.
Because, yes, it's obviously the print.
And he's obviously found in the country. So the only thing and he obviously didn't come in with the Attorney General's permission. So the only missing piece here is, as I understand it, is the gentleman who was seated in the back of that truck on that day, is he the same person that the government deported back whenever they deported him? And how does the government prove that?
Who would need the permission of the Attorney General?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And surely they have a photograph of who they deported years ago.
Right? I don't.
Mr. Goes is shaking his head. Surely they do.
They may not. We don't.
They got a photograph of. So I'm just curious if that photograph and his admissions before the traffic stop was prolonged.
He didn't make any admissions.
Well, I'm not clear about that. You're saying he didn't make any admissions? First of all,
the only thing he did was provide the identification.
Well, he didn't provide the identification until the other occupants translated the request in Spanish.
Correct.
All of that comes in, right?
True, but then you get back to the problem Judge Gregory was addressing, where the only evidence against him seems to be the fact that he's one of the 14 million people in this country who speak Spanish and don't speak English very well.
I'm not sure what you're getting at. I understood what Judge Gregory was getting at.
I don't understand how that's evidence of some form of illegal entry or illegal reentry.
No. That wouldn't be the illegal reentry.
Or even illegal entry. Just the fact that
the government proves illegal reentry through negative evidence. And
true.
They would put on evidence, as you know, they would put on evidence that the Attorney General has never given permission to this person to come into the country. And yet he's found in the country. So the unavoidable inference is that he came into the country illegally.
If they can prove he is that person.
Exactly. So then the question is, can they prove that the person who was riding through Virginia... West Virginia used to be the same, no more. Riding through West Virginia is the same person who was deported years ago. Seems to me the government can probably prove this case without the paper. Be a much more difficult
process. It would be much more difficult, and I'm not going to concede.
Of course not. Thank you.
Thank you,
Judge Gregory.
Hold on, Mr. Byrne, before you go away, at this question, let's assume that we find that it was a Fourth Amendment violation, and then we are in the Oscar Torres territory in terms of whether or not you can suppress these fingerprints. And I know you're familiar with the case, and I know this is particularly, it may be dicta in a sense, but in that case they said, you don't misheard the fact that it could be, identity might be based on what the circumstance is repressible, but it depends on the fact, administrative versus investigative.
Mm-hmm.
But they gave some four examples suggesting that these would be administrative purposes. Doesn't it sound a little bit like your case? For example, immigration agents testified that they arrested Oscar Torres simply to deport him, and they fingerprinted him as a part of the normal processing for an alien, and that authorities only contemplated a criminal prosecution when the fingerprints led to the record of Oscar Torres' prior felony and deportation. Doesn't it sound awful, that example, a little bit like you?
The thing that is missing in that example, Your Honor, is how the defendant wound up in custody. And in our case, it's the stop, stop is legally extended, it becomes like the Guevara case from the Eighth Circuit, where all of that information is obtained only because they are exploiting the illegal detention.
But Oscar Torres was in a better position than your person, correct? Because he was the object of the stop for criminal gang. He thought he was part of an alien gang for criminal purposes. So even with that, they said that example in the taint may be purged, even more so for a person who was encountered solely because of the question of whether or not they're legally in. You follow what I'm saying? Wouldn't that example be harder for you? Not easier?
I believe so, because I think they had some idea of who he was when the investigation began and whether he was illegally intended. And in our case, there's no indicia that Mr. Ortiz was illegally in the country until the ICE investigation began.
My point is there was no hint at him being criminally investigated at all. For Oscar Torres, there was ab initio. But here, as I think Judge Davis questioned as he started with you, and that is, wait a minute, ask for ID, and then at that point, he's administratively being questioned, and he gives it to them, and it leads to that side of it. So,
that gets back to, is it our burden to prove it's a criminal investigation, or is it the government's burden to prove it's an administrative one? And I don't think the evidence shows that a stop made by local law enforcement on the side of the road begins as an immigration investigation.
Okay. All right. Very well. Thank you very much, counsel, for your arguments. I'm going to ask the clerk to adjourn the court for the term, and then we'll come down and greet counsel.
All right.